Welcome to the Share Life podcast with Jason Scott Montoya, where we explore stories and systems to live better and work smarter. Well, welcome to an inspirational people interview on the Share Life podcast. Today I'm here with Abby Shepherd. Abby, say hello.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great.
Glad to have you here. Abby is a entrepreneur, a fellow entrepreneur. She is part of the Abby Shepherd Real Estate Group, and she began in real estate in 2006. She can tell us a little bit about her entrepreneurial journey. And she's built a team. So she started out just as her under the Keller Williams brand and has built out her own team and her own real estate group. She is the person that has done it all in the business. She's done the listings and the selling, and now she's shifted more to running the team, although she still does keeps her foot in the hot water. But she also focuses on the mentoring and the coaching side of it as she grows her team. So Abby, thanks for so much for sharing your life with us today. Me and you met many, many years ago, over a decade ago, 2008, 2009, somewhere around then, through some mutual networking events that we went through, some mutual friends that that we orbited around. And so we saw each other. You've also worked with my parents when they were trying to sell the condo that we lived in when we moved here. Mm-hmm. And then you also helped us buy our house. So you've definitely had a working relationship with us, and for that, we're grateful. But tell us about you, and how did you get the entrepreneurial bug?
Oh my gosh. Well, thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me. So that's a really good question. I think I've always had it. Even if I look at jobs growing up, you know, waiting tables and such, you know, I definitely like to work kind of my own hours, make money when I worked, and was okay with a fluctuating income. So I think early on, you know, and wanted to make my own schedule and have, you know, my financial dependence based on how hard that I wanted to work and what I chose to do. So I think early on, one of my earliest stories that I didn't realize at the time, but I go back to, well, what's funny is I went to Georgia Tech, graduated with a physics degree. I went there because I thought I needed to be an engineer like my dad. And so then I got there and went,
oh. What type of engineer was he?
He's a civil engineer. Yep.
Okay.
So
what made you feel that tension that you had to be an engineer? Was that something that came from him, or was it just something you put on yourself or someone
else? I was good at math, you know, and so I think that, you know, when you come, or at least the way I was raised, you know, I always knew I was going to go to college and you had to pick something. You know, I think a lot of kids feel that pressure too. And gosh, I wish like the gap year was around, you know, and a popular thing when I graduated high school. And it wasn't. You just went straight into school. And so I had to pick something. So I started undecided engineering, and then, and so pretty quickly I fell in love with physics.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I switched to physics and then just studied that because that's what I like to do. But still not even knowing what I wanted to do. And I did work in the lab a little bit, and it wasn't, found out real fast it wasn't my thing. And so towards the end, when I took some electives, I took some classes in city planning and loved it. And so and that's really what drives me today. I love watching, even when I travel, my husband and I used to travel a lot before kids, and we would just land in a city and people watch and kind of walk around and find our way through the city and how people live. And, I've always been fascinated about that. And really, truly, even if you look at where I live today, you know, a community, it takes a community. And Jason, as you know, with so many kids, I mean, it really, you know, takes a community. So, I've just always been fascinated with that. So I thought, well, rather than go back to school for urban planning, I'll get my real estate license. And so I did that. I started volunteering on city zoning boards and such, and then, thought that I was going to do more commercial and development, and then kind of fell into selling houses to a bunch of my friends, realized that I love that. And so that's really how I landed in real estate and the industry.
Now, am I talking to the future mayor of Brookhaven or Buckhead here? That's what it sounds like.
It's so funny. Yeah, my husband sometimes calls me the mayor of Buckhead, but I'm not, but I have been on the NPUB for over a decade and design review committees and get really passionate and involved with projects as they come through. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, how does physics tie into real estate?
Good question. Well, I will tell you there is one thing that I love doing and why I still work with a lot of sellers. I love analyzing the market and positioning a house in the market, pricing and strategies and timing and negotiating and all of that is very, can be very technical and analysis driven. So I do, and watching the stats and everything, you know, I do really enjoy that part of the business.
Yeah. Now, another facet you mentioned, we have kids, so we have five, but you're also a mother. So tell us about how that ties into this whole entrepreneurial journey.
Well, I always wanted a large family. And I suppose having five kids, it's fantastic as an entrepreneur because, you know, you really do, once again, get to, you know, make your own schedule and, you know, what you do in life, the work that you put into it is what you get out of it financially. So I think, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand. Now that is different from, because you have to be comfortable with, if you choose not to work as much, you know, or, you know, you don't make as much money, you realize that that's a choice. And so, and then on the other hand, you have to support a large family. So, you know, so it allows the flexibility. And at the same time, you know, if you're smart with it, you know, and good about it and efficient with, you know, systems and other people in your life, then you really can build and grow something that allows for both success in work and success at home.
Yeah. So what would you say to this? Because this has been my experience. So I learned a lot when I had my marketing company, Noodlehead Marketing, and I freelance now. So so it's a little bit different, but I learned so many parenting lessons as an entrepreneur and as a business owner that really helped me as a parent, especially as the kids got older, as they get older. My oldest is going to be 14 this year. So I'm curious if you would agree with that or if you share that sentiment.
Are you asking me like if employees and children like could be
well?
The same?
I'm just wondering if you've learned anything on how to be a good parent from being a good business owner.
Oh, that is a good question. So, I mean, it's definitely. I mean, I think with anything in life, you know, there's definitely boundaries and planning and keeping a calendar. Yeah. I mean, I definitely time blocking. I mean, I definitely in my work life and my home life. I am basically just a calendar organizer, you know, through and through. So definitely a lot of the skills that I
learned. But was that something in your personality from before being a business owner, or is that something you had to do because you were one?
You know, I think it's definitely in my wheelhouse to be able to organize and, you know, stick to a plan. For sure. But the tricks, it's still is challenging. And so little tricks and tactics. I mean, you know, when I first got into real estate, I refused the electronic calendar, you know, so everything was on.
Did you have a physical one? Yeah.
Everything was like a day planner. So that does not work, you know, especially when you have a large, you know, you're communicating and working with several different people, the community, you know.
Yeah.
So there's some tools that I've definitely adopted along the way that work in both business and family.
Yeah. No, that's, I agree. I've become a calendar person as well. And I do tend to have like a system mindset. But I can also be kind of, creative, like where I get in the zone where I'm almost like forgetting time exists. So having those reminders and calendar helps me, you know, not miss those important things that are on the calendar.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It takes, you know, and then lots of, you know, compassion and patience and, you know, just, I mean, I think We have a saying where we say, it's just real estate. It's not life or death, because we are not surgeons. I'm not performing. I'm not a doctor, physician. So, it's really, it puts things into perspective. And I think that also helps, in the home life too, where not everything's an emergency. Let's see if, especially with a large family, let's see if there's another resource or person that can help. It very much is structured much like a small business in our home. So, as it's like there's a pecking order of children. And so, if this one can't help yourself and this one can't help you, and then like, did you try all your resources before you came and asked me?
So you're helping them become independent.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. In fact, I don't know how my children would not be able to be entrepreneurs. Between my husband also owns his own. He has a small boutique law firm. And so just the principles, and they're in an international baccalaureate program in school that and that's a different conversation. But it also kind of teaches you principles and values and how to, think and be independent and that sort of thing. And so I don't know how they would not be entrepreneurs growing up, but you never know. Everybody's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am a fifth generation entrepreneur.
Makes sense.
And so it's kind of, it is something, I don't know what is, I'll have to think about that further, but there's something about that where when someone goes before you, it's easier to take that step. And I'm also ambitious and creative. So like, I don't think about the obstacles that can prevent me from getting what I want. I just figure out how to overcome them. And that's kind of the core entrepreneurial mindset.
And I also think not getting stuck. Like, there's no such thing as getting stuck. If you are not happy, in the work that you're doing, at least, I feel like my husband and I have shown my kids, you can go a different direction. There, you do have options.
Yeah.
So like start that. With what you love first, and then the success will follow, So, and I think just providing that framework and foundation and way of thinking, will help them in the same way. Like, it's going to be okay. I mean, I know you're a very faithful person too. It's, God first. It's like, it is going to be all right, And so, making decisions out of, in faith instead of in fear, out of fear is like, you kind of have to take a stand for yourself and go, okay, this is me. These are my values. I know this is right. And so, and it might not be right for everybody, but let's move forward on this platform, and then let's attract other people within the same culture. And then everybody, and if we do that right, after several of, bruises and bumps and failing forward along the way, it's gonna be an amazing journey, and we'll continue to grow personally, professionally, and as a community.
Yeah. So you talk about something I think is super important, which is that community piece, but also the collaborative approach to it. And I think in our society, particularly, we tend to have such a autonomous and independent culture where I'm supposed to do it myself, or, kind of, instead of letting my team know like the struggles that we're facing as a business so that we can figure out how to solve it together. We're kind of trying at least my own experience is in the business, I would try and solve it myself. Right. And so I'm curious, how you think about that, or how, because that's what I heard you saying was that type of collaboration.
Absolutely.
So talk about that more.
Okay. So I just got finished reading Dan Sullivan's Who, Not How. Really good book.
Okay.
And it talks a lot about this. It talks about how, like, as early as, children in school were taught, cheating. It's cheating if we work together on homework. You do your own test and you look at your, so that kind of competitive individuality, is ingrained in us as children, which on another side note is why I'm a big fan of the International Baccalaureate program, because it teaches collaboration and working together and such. So it's a different mindset, because the future of our workforce is getting more collaborative. I think we've realized that that's what we need, and that's the direction we're going. What was really cool about Keller Williams, and it is was like the number one fastest growing real estate company, and it today is the largest in agent count, volume, all over. It's worldwide. And so
yeah,
it's really an open book company, and we all collaborate and share ideas. It's the largest training real estate training company. For years, yeah, they even won the largest training organization in just like throughout several different industries. And so it's really just, I came into Keller Williams in 2006, and that's the work environment. And I think for many, a lot of realtors are catching on, but I think it was very foreign when I first started. Our company would share, like, for example, listing presentations. We always have mastermind groups, you know, we're always like the agents will teach classes. I teach a lot of classes on how to price property, how to negotiate contracts, and give out all my stuff. I give out my systems, my contract checklist, my, you know, you want to see my presentation, whatever. And we all kind of get together. And so that's really the environment in which I've been working for almost 20 years. And
yeah,
I mean, the proof is in the way that Keller Williams has grown as a company, and it still amazes me. Okay, so where we are today in the real estate industry is there's super, super low inventory. And so a lot of deals now, see, you know, 7 years ago, the conversation was Zillow is going to take everybody's listings and win because the buyer can go online to Zillow and find a house. Well, because inventory is so low right now, we're now back to like real estate sales where it's like pocket listings and who has what and do you know anything coming soon on the market? And so for us in Keller Williams, I mean, I can't tell you how many text messages and conversations I have daily with, hey, do you have anything in Garden Hills that's, you know, 5-bedroom? And other realtors are just not, and different companies, not all of them, but a lot of the traditional realtors are just not, you know, they're shocked by this level of collaboration that would, but it's what it takes today to get deals done. So it's really interesting how that's kind of come back around.
Yeah. Well, that makes me think of a couple questions to ask you before we ask you about living better. You've been a real estate agent since 2006. So you've experienced the 2008-09 craziness and the market changes there and the crash. But you also experienced the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then you also experienced the craziness that came after the pandemic with what you're talking about. I'm curious, you know, what is your experience? Like, what are some of the lessons you learned and how do you look back at those trends and what are some of the things you learned?
So the biggest lesson, obviously, is to be flexible, you know, and to be... and to adapt and adapt quickly, you know, and you to put your ego aside, you know, what you were doing before, or what made you successful before might not be what made you, you know, is going to continue. So you have to be open to suggestions. I mean, what other people are doing and making adjustments. I think that's the biggest lesson.
How do you do, see someone that's been super successful at the way they've done it for, let's say they've been doing it for a long time, and obviously you're saying they need to pivot, but that could be really hard for someone that's in, kind of ingrained in a system that has worked. Yeah. Right?
I mean, I think,
but that's often how
I think we lost, I know we lost a lot of realtors in the first, in the crash, the first one I went through, you know, 2009, 10. And you know, and some of, then that's fine. Some people just said, this is time for me to retire or get out of the business. This is just, I don't want to adjust, you know, but I did want to. And so, I mean, we did like,
do you think starting, cause like I started my marketing company in 2007 ish. I don't really even remember the market crash, although mine was the marketing company. Like, it was almost like I was ignorant of what was going on. I was just like, oh, this is normal.
Yeah.
But I don't know if, since you were kind of newer to real estate, did you feel that same way or did it really have an impact?
I did. Yeah. I definitely was building a business as it was crashing. And so I really didn't know what it was like when it was really, really good. Now some people would say, well, you know, before interest rates started increasing, you know, right after, so from like, you know, fourth quarter of 2020 to, you know, first quarter of, or second quarter of 2022, you really know what it's like when it was good, you know, cause you just, whatever, you listed anything, everybody was happy. Interest rates were still really low. I mean, that was fantastic, you know, and I think, you know, but we always knew you know to save up, I guess, or just know that it's that this is good to appreciate it, but also, you know, be conservative enough with things that, you know, and be kind of open and looking around for what's the next, because it's always a cycle, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm,
and that's, I think, the key is if you're in it, if you're going to be in it for the long run, to realize that those cycles come and go and to be able to endure them and anticipate them.
Yeah.
That way you can actually, it's an opportunity versus a catastrophe.
Yeah. So whereas I will say in the last, I bought my first house in 2006. So, and then we moved and kept it as a rental, and then the market completely crashed. And so I did a short sale. So, you know, it's not like I haven't been there, you know, where you're living month to month or, you know, just making ends meet.
Yeah.
But again, I think that goes back to the faith thing. Is like, is that's the worst that it gets? I mean,
yeah,
I've always had good, you know, family and friends, and you know, thank goodness I haven't had to struggle on that side of things. But financially, is nothing. You know, you just make it through, and then like you're saying, you learn lessons.
Yeah, and on the faith side, I think of it like I do what I can do to control what I have control over, like be responsible for that, and then sort of leave it at the door and trust that God will fill in the gaps.
Yeah. And even if, like, one tactic I do sometimes is like, if I find myself getting worked up over something, I might take it to like the worst case scenario in my head. And then, you know, at the worst case scenario, I'm always like, okay. I'd still be okay. Is that, you know, I wouldn't be happy with it, whatever I might be. You know, but there's been times I'm on my knees, you know, I'm just like, help me, you know, February 2020, I was on my knees right before COVID, you know? So, I mean, it's just, that's part of the journey, I think, as an entrepreneur.
So if, what would you say to that person that's right, that's in that place right now? Like, how would you encourage them if they feel that?
I mean, I think you have to, our gut knows what we need to do differently. You know, our gut knows, like, for me, at that point, I needed to let some people go. And so listen to your gut. And again, you've got to do what you've got to do, you know, set the ego aside. And again, just, I mean, for me, it was a lot of prayer, you know, it was just prayer. And then, like, I gave up the weight of the whole thing to God.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I wasn't paralyzed. Giving up the weight to God made it to where I was no longer paralyzed, and I could do the hard stuff that I needed to do, that my gut was telling me, this is the next right step. It's not easy, but it's what I need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, sometimes it means doing the hard things, right? That we don't want to do.
Yeah.
And walking through pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're stronger on the other side, you know?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
It's just, it's not like any of us want to do that, but it's what we have to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us what you think about when you think about the word or the phrase live better. Like, what does that mean for you? And how does that tie into this?
Oh, you asked me this on this. So I need to, oh yeah. We kind of touched on this, because it was, you know, spend every day doing what you love to do. With who you love. And, you know, that sounds like, oh, you know, I'm living in a dream world on a pink cloud. But there are some systems in place that you can do. Like our team, for example, we come in every day for stand up, and, we do, the first thing we say is gratitude. So everybody goes around the room and says one thing they're grateful for. And that's how we start the daily meeting. So, you know, it's, there's little things I think throughout the day. We do it with the kids too, you know, so we,
What is it? What do you think that does by having that habit? What does it, how does it help?
For the team or for the kids or?
But for both, for just having a gratefulness habit.
I mean,
what does it do for us as humans?
I mean, everything. I mean, I think it resets it. It forces us to focus on the positive, you know, it also promotes connection and conversation. So, you know, that's really, I think, the biggest thing for work particularly, because I think you can come into work and you can get like, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this. This is my focus today. Mm-hmm. But to come together as a team and go, let's connect for a minute, you know, and then, and make it a little more real, because again, these are the people I'm spending more time with my work family than I am with my home family right now. Again, the ultimate goal is to spend more with the home family.
Yeah.
But I mean, why not? Again, that's what I'm saying about, you know, as an entrepreneur, is like, you get the choice to do what you love first, and then the success will follow. You're spending so much time working, you know, you might as well be doing something you love, and then with the people that you love as well. So, you know, some of it is hiring, making sure there's people in alignment, and with similar values and culture as you, you know, and then there's, you know, that's the first step. And then there's, you know, feeding the culture and growing, you know, just on a daily basis and connecting, strengthening connections. So that's on the thing, like, you know, that's on the team. I don't know, with the kids, I mean, it's just like, it's again, teaching them habits of, you know, how they can, as they grow and, you know, become their own into society and have their own jobs, they know some tools that help.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, I sent you the letter and you responded with, I'm taking two of my kids to Honduras on a service trip. And so we're going to serve the poor community there. And I don't know exactly the specifics we're doing, but part of it is similar to what you're talking about, is like, it's to give them a contrast in myself. Like, here's where how it is in like a third world country and what we have in America, and learning to see that contrast and appreciate.
Yeah. And that's the difference, right? And it takes like, you know, it takes effort to do that, right? Because I mean, think about everything that you had to like, think about how many, there's a saying about the big rocks. Like when we make our schedule and we're goal setting for the year, we put in like the big rocks first, like the big family vacations or goals and objectives we have, because, you know, if you try to fill a jar and you fill it like first with sand and then you try to shove the rocks in, it's like easier to do the rocks and then the pebbles and then fill in the sand. You can get so much more in and make sure that there's space for the big stuff. Yeah. So that habit, you know, or lesson or what have you, you know, takes some training on how to do that, rather than just, you know, waking up every day and flying at the seat of your pants. And entrepreneurs are great about that, because either you're successful or you're not successful, you know? And so that's like you said, keeping a calendar and these kind of things, planning, are all definitely habits and skills that you learn as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just think about our trip, like we're going to go there, but they probably have way more to give us than we have to give them in that sense. Like they probably have, when you don't have a lot, you have to learn to prioritize what matters most. Right. And yeah, with entrepreneurs, we do tend to, you know, kind of willingly lean into the fire and adversity, and probably more so, than other classes, but it's kind of an interesting dynamic to think about.
Yeah.
So what about living better? What do you think about living better? What does that mean to you?
I mean, again, for me, it's just taking, making sure your life is full of people that you love and doing things that you love to do. And, you know, if you're personally in a good space, then you can actually be useful to other people, whether it's your family, your work family, your community, you know, so
it's operating from a position of strength versus weakness, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Proactive versus reactive. And, you know, just making sure,
how do you make that paradigm shift? Because I think it's so easy to get caught up in being reactive to everything, like a ping pong ball at a pinball machine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it comes back to just faith. You have to stop what you're doing long enough. If you're doing something that's not making you happy, or you feel like you're on the hamster wheel, you have to stop long enough to, you know, maybe do some meditations and prayer to figure out, like, and it takes that faith of knowing you're going to be okay. You know, of course, there's, you know, asking for help. I mean, for me, throughout my life personally, I got a lot of help from other people when I asked for help. And so the resources are out there. We just have to, you know, put ourselves aside, the egos aside, and say, like, I need help, because there's so many people that can help and are willing to help.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the, a lot of these resources can be free too, you know.
Yeah.
At least for me, I found a lot of, you know, free resources that could help.
Yeah. How do you be a good help recipient?
How do you receive help? A good,
like, how do you, yeah, how do you be, how do you receive help in a productive and useful way? Like, in a help, you know, it's one thing to, for someone to offer help, but how do you be, you know, it's kind of a different way of thinking about it, but how do you respond to that help in a way that, that is honoring to the person helping you, but also gets the most out of that help?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the first thing to realize is that, you know, people that are offering help want to help. You know, there's nothing worse than someone wants to help and you say, like, I don't need your help. Like, that's a disservice. The same way with, like, receiving a gift, you know, if someone's giving you a gift and you're like, no, thank you. You know, they really want the joy of giving you the gift. Like, someone really wants the joy of helping you, you know? And so I think that's the first step, is realizing that people want to help. You know, another step to that is knowing that we all deserve help. Like, we're all deserving of, you know, as we are, we're all, and I don't know how to tell someone that's like a self-esteem kind of thing, that we're worthy of help and we're, you know, and, other than doing esteemable acts, I don't know how else to build self-esteem other than through prayer and doing esteemable acts. So I don't know if that is making sense. What I'm saying is, like, if there's a hole,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. If there's, like, a self-esteem hole, God fills that hole. And also there's, if that doesn't make sense, you know, keep praying and it will eventually.
Yeah.
And, another thing you could do is esteemable acts. So, like, just, maybe do something for somebody, you know, anonymously, or, you know, if you're doing little esteemable acts, you will grow your own self-esteem over time. So none of this stuff happens overnight, but So then once you've built your self-esteem through, like, God, faith, and doing esteemable acts, then you can then, and then, you know, hey, this person wants to help me. That's why they're offering.
Yeah.
Then you are ready to receive help.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a bunch of cool things to add to the formula there, and just understanding how we both ask for help and receive help and becoming good at both, right? I think it's part of being a community. We need to be good at both. So that kind of shifts to the next question, which is about mentoring. So what do you think about mentoring? That's kind of part of your vision as you go forward in your career with your business. What does mentoring mean to you? How do you think about it? How has it impacted you as a person in your life?
Okay. So I just want to make sure I'm thinking. Okay. So we talked a lot about this, about, like, Keller Williams being an open book company. And really, I mean, that's the way I've been in the last, you know, in the company, the environment that I've been. So obviously it's hugely important. And, you know, growing a team and a successful team, for an entrepreneur getting scale, has to do with systems and people. And so, you know, putting back into your people and mentoring them, will pay off, you know, hugely. You know, that's really, and that's important. And also to have mentors, you know, I've had, business coach, consistently. So I've switched over the years, I've had several different business coaches over the years. But I'm trying to think of my first business coaches. I was probably, 3 or 4 years into the business when I hired someone, like, for me personally.
Oh, okay.
And that's in addition to all the mastermind groups we do, you know, within the company and mentoring each other. And I mean, I called a girl within our company. Just we've been playing a little phone tag, and she's next week we're getting together, and I'm just going to take her to lunch and pick her brain about how did you get to this next level. You know, so yeah, I mean, that's hugely important for all of us to grow and to collaborate.
Now, have you ever had a toxic mentor or a toxic coach before?
I mean, not really. I mean, I've always been able to, and maybe that's the same thing with like where gratitude, you focus on the positive, you know, it's like a buffet, I guess. So, you know, you just take the stuff that you like and you leave the, leave the rest. So, so no, I've been able to get, great stuff out of all the, business coaches I've had, so far, all the mentors, and sometimes, you know, some of those, definitely a lot of those relationships we've moved on, but not because of any toxicity or anything, but you know, sometimes it's just time to move on and that's okay.
Now, how does, so tell us about how the mentoring plays into the vision for your business in the future as you grow and then you build out your team and you have more people on it.
I mean, ultimately in a perfect world, if I was just like, you know, family and then mentoring, coaching, teaching classes, that would be the ultimate job, you know, for me. Know, just total fun because I'm such a connector. I moved around when I was young all over the States. And so I learned at a really young age.
What was the catalyst for that?
What's that?
What was the catalyst for all the moving?
Oh, because my dad's a civil engineer. So he'd build a bridge and we'd move or build something and then we'd move. And so I got to see just over the States, not internationally, but I got to see a lot of different cultures and ways of life and meet a lot of different people. And so I guess at an early age, I just learned how to, I've always learned from people. I'm kind of wired that way too. So, so for me, learning from people and giving back to people and inspiring people, that's just, that I'm so passionate about that. And that's like the ultimate for me.
So you're just a, so tell us, talk more about that connecting part. Cause, I mean, obviously that's how we met, was at a networking event. And, I can definitely relate to the connector side of things. When I moved to Atlanta in 2005, I was from Arizona, and, the church I used to go to, like I was the bringer of people to a youth group. Like, and he said, after I left, like all of those people that were coming stopped coming. So I can definitely relate to that, but I'd be curious, you know, just your own experience of connecting and meeting people and all that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously as a kid, when you move around and you're, you know, in elementary school and a couple different high schools and, you know, so you've got to learn how to really, you know, connect with people and then, you know, try to, and I think it's just being very, like open and listening to people and realizing like what part of, these people can I like as part of me, you know? So you and I might, I mean, we might not connect. I don't know. Like my kids play soccer. We might not connect on soccer. We might connect on the entrepreneur thing. But oh my gosh, if you have soccer kids, like I could talk your ear off a million different ways. So it's just like, how do you connect? It's just like finding the things inside of yourself that you're passionate about that comes out by asking questions of other people. In my work, I get to do this all the time because, you know, when I'm, when I work with sellers. And so when someone calls in, they typically call in with a question like, what's my home worth? Or, can you help me sell my house? Whatever, you know? And so I have a million questions right off the bat, you know, like, oh my gosh, where are you moving to? Or why is that important to you? You know, and like digging three deep. But I describe it as like, if I'm, if I talk to somebody, an intake of a client, and I don't fully see their picture, like I'm unsettled. I need to keep asking questions until I fully understand like what they're trying to do, you know? And so,
because you want to help them do that thing.
Yeah. Because I want to know what they're trying to do. And I want to know like all of the feelings and all of the factors and all the things that they have going on in their lives to help them get to their result. But if one piece of it, you know, and I teach classes on this to people, other realtors too, because like if you're doing a listing pre-qual, you know, like there's pre-qualification questions when you're taking a listing, you know, and so realtors will say, and I'll script with them and they'll give me like, maybe the seller might be hot, like holding back on telling them something. And the question is, and why is not the best question, because some people can put up like get defensive on if you say, well, why? Mm. Well, why, you know? So you there's certain ways to ask someone a question that, you know, gets them to talk and tell you everything. But I can't help you unless I fully understand what you have going on. And so there's actually a skill involved that to get to the bottom and truly understand what someone's trying to do.
Yeah. And so how much does authentic curiosity play a role in that for you?
Oh, that's like, 100%. I mean, well, for me, again, I take pride in being able to do a good job. And I feel like I can't do a good job unless if I truly understand what this person's trying to do. So I think for me, it's more of the skill is there. I know how to do it because I've been doing it my whole life. And as a result, I'm able to get people to the point where they want to be quicker with the best success, you know, whatever success is for them, and, you know, make them feel good about it, you know, because they feel like they've done what they've sought to do, and somebody listened to them and helped them get there and really got it, you know.
Yeah. So I would imagine buying a house for most people most of the time is a pretty personal thing. So how do you navigate that dynamic? You know, having and building the trust and them being willing to share those things with you in a very open way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what takes some time and skill to like connect with someone and have them open up to you enough, and trust you enough to be able to tell you, you know, what their biggest desires are. And especially if you're helping people buy a house, because you might have two people on a different page completely.
Yeah.
And so
you're also kind of an ad hoc marriage counselor. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I do more on the listing side, and with listings, I mean, you have divorce.
Oh, in terms of selling it.
Oh my gosh. So that's like, that can be the most challenging is, cause there's a lot of dynamics going on there, you know? And you have to talk to them both. You can't really talk to them separately. You know, so navigating that is probably the most challenging. It's fun. And I like to think that I, you know, can be more helpful to people in that situation and helping them both get to, you know, the best case scenario.
Yeah. And I think some of that ties into narratives, like the narratives we have and that we interact. So I'm curious, you know, what stories, fictional, real, that have shaped you as a person in your journey?
Yeah. So this is interesting. We started with talking about like how we got into real estate and the engineer thing and everything. So my dad, who I obviously looked up to and thought I was supposed to be him because I chose engineering just like him. So he worked for large engineering companies for years. And then when I went to college, so I don't know what he would have been in his late 50s or something. He decided he was going to start his own engineering firm or, you know, gig. I don't know what, I wouldn't call it a firm. That's why. So it sounds great.
Soft,
right? Sounds great. I could do this. I'm going to do it on my own. And so I watched him, like, I can remember coming home from college and he's like in an office upstairs doing payroll and like stressing over it and like, doing in his computer doing computer work, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is not your talents. I mean, you were, out in the, he's great with people. He was like project manager, engineer kind of guy. And he's super smart, can see how things and projects are supposed to run and supposed to go. But then he's in this, as you know, as an entrepreneur, your first job is to bring in the business. You're the rainmaker,
Yeah.
And then you've got all the back end stuff that you have to do. And then you've got damage control and you've got, and then if you have a business, you're running payroll and he's doing bids and he just did all of this himself. I think he maybe hired a day laborer when he actually had to do the work, but I saw him I'm like,
what? So he was a freelancer then in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, so that didn't last long. He had one or two projects, maybe a year or two. So that story and that experience always stuck with me. And so I remember, because this is like the man you have on a pedestal, for me, it was the first time my dad had I'm like, this is my dad. And he's like going to close down this business and he couldn't cut it, And so when I went to college, I remember trying to take business classes. And so I didn't understand all of this at the time. And I was at Georgia Tech and the business, their college management was growing so much that you can't get into business class unless you were a management major. So I could never take any of those classes. And so fast forward, I get into real estate and all of a sudden I land in a company that is teaching people to grow teams and how to plan a business and how to build a business. The resources that Keller Williams has, training, classes, conventions, books, otherwise, on building a business is like unbelievable. And so I just I was like a kid in a candy store. I just soaked up all this, stuff. And so it wasn't until, years later that I looked back and I'm like, oh man, that experience really shaped me because I didn't want to, that was really the point at which I broke off from my dad and thought, okay, I'm different than him. Yes, I'm good at math and science, but I'm different. We're two different people with different skills and likes and desires.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I, when I shut down Noodlehead, really one of the, in retrospect, one of the big questions was what do I want to, I knew continuing the agency was going to be hard work. So the question was, if I was going to put that hard work into anything vocationally, would I choose to have an agency? And the answer was not yes. And I realized that was when I realized I've got to let this go. Like I'm kind of committed, but I'm not fully committed.
Yeah.
And so that was part of that process. And a little bit later, I learned Peter Drucker and Jim Collins had this conversation that they share. And Peter Drucker tells Jim Collins, there's two types of entrepreneurs. There's the entrepreneur who builds a business and a team and scales that and either runs it or sells it. And then there's the idea entrepreneur, which creates an ideas, like podcasting, like books. And I realized I was the second type of entrepreneur, not the first. And I was trying to be the first through the marketing company.
Interesting.
And so that was kind of, for me, a similar shift to kind of take those core valuable elements, but then to repurpose them in the right way. And freelancing has just been a better fit for me in terms of earning an income, but also allowing me to pursue the idea business and develop that more organically along the way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, right. I never heard of the difference.
Yeah,
I'll have to think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you think about systems? You seem like you're the type of person who's prepared and has a plan, and you talked about the calendar. So you must love systems. I assume.
Yes, I love what systems can do for a business. My natural personality disc profile is not heavy into systems. However, I have a mad
what is your disc
respect
profile?
For them.
Mm.
Which is funny because you're talking about this idea thing. Well, we implemented on our team. There's actually a meeting called the ideas meeting, because what would happen is I'd come into the team and, just barf all these ideas on them and then, oh, we should do this. We should do this. And, my operations girl had, she got to the point where she said, unless you bring it up three times, we're not going to do it. And so, I was like, okay, there's got to be a better system with which we can vet these ideas, right? So
what's your DIS profile?
My C is also above the line, and then my S is pretty low. So
okay. Yeah. So I'm IS.
Okay. So you are systems.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I have a math.
But it's funny you said the idea thing, because when I had someone who used to work with me, and we would have all these ideas, and we would, in the meeting, we would say, let's table that idea. Uh-huh. And she would say, where's this imaginary table? Like, that's holding all of these ideas.
So now we write them down. Really great, because, you know, we had like one the other day where we went through and were able to say, okay, yes, we're finding a lot of the ideas are good and we can do them, but like one of them we're going to do February 2024, you know? And so we have this whole conversation with our team, because the idea is, you know, I bring all these ideas, and then go, we don't have the resources for that. So we have a space when we meet once a week to discuss how the idea impacts the entire team, what resources we need. And what we're finding is most of the ideas we can actually do. We just can't do them today, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but being a D, you want them done today, right?
Yeah. So, and having this system in place means that they also don't just fall by the wayside, you know, because they do have a date at which we can do them. And I help my team with, my favorite thing is, Stephen Covey's, you know, the 7 habits, of highly successful business people. So, you know, that quadrant where there's like the urgent, important, urgent, unimportant, you know, non-urgent, important. Yeah. And so all those ideas are typically like those non-urgent, important things that, you know, so I'm expecting that we'll really grow a lot, because we'll spend a lot more time in that non-urgent, important quadrant now that we have a space for the ideas meeting where we're discussing them and talking about the timeline and projects that we have, instead of just, you know, daily to-do stuff.
So one of the things I most admire about you is your consistency and your communication, your follow-up. And I think with sales, you know, I think I read this statistic that most sales take 8 interactions before you actually get a deal. Yeah. At least in B2B, I don't know if that's in your case.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, like, is that just you, or do you have a system for that kind of thing?
Oh yeah. Well, we have a ton of systems. So I use Follow Up Boss as our CRM that, I have tasks.
I mean, so, I can expect a call from you like at least once, maybe twice a year.
Yes, you will. If you're on, there are 650 people that I call through twice a year. So you're one of them.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
And so there's 5,000 people that don't get the calls, but they get, you know, the emails and all emails that stuff. And other so, things. So there's definitely a system around that. And,
but where did that come from originally? Like, was that part of your personality that you kind of created that type of system?
Or no, that's all the Keller Williams model. I mean, they have this book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, which is like their Bible, essentially. Yeah. If you're at Keller Williams, you've read this book, and a lot of people read it multiple times. So they have a marketing model. They have a budget model. They have a hiring model, you know, all kinds of systems. So there's a touch 36 plan where, you know, the research on if you are touching 36 people a year, 36 times a year, you know, you can expect a 12 to 2.
So they have the numbers then. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You expect a 12 to 2 return on those touches. And within our calendar, so we come in the mornings at 9 a.m. and we do our little stand up. And then I go into lead generation until about 11. And so on Mondays and Fridays, I do the Follow-Up Boss tasks. So if there is a lead that's like, I'm going to sell. Are you still there? Sorry, my thing just said my batteries. Okay. If there is a lead that says, I'm going to sell, you know, then, and I put it on, you know, follow-up whatever on Monday, and then on Monday I come in and I pull all the tasks. So yeah, it's all a system.
Okay. Yeah, that's I think consistency is one of the most important factors for success in entrepreneurship. But I know for me, and probably why I admired it in you for so long, is I struggled with that for so long until I could kind of finally break through and have that consistency. So what would your advice be to somebody that, like, how do you have that level of discipline to not only have the system, but to actually follow through on the system as well?
I don't know if it just works well for me, but I think it works well for most people and would be good advice for most people because our team, like I said, comes into the office at 9 a.m. So it is time blocking and keeping a calendar to start and forming habits. So the habit of coming in, like I know specifically with realtors, if you are just driven by your client meetings. Let's say, you got a client at 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock. So then, I don't know, maybe you could get up at any time of the day before then, and you've got a to-do list. You just shove in your to-do list in between your meetings or something. But for me, I have to, well, there's a day before I get into the office at 9, between like workout and kids and all that stuff. But when we get into n at 9, then we just have that habit in what we do every day. And so, yeah, I think it starts with time blocking and a calendar, following that calendar.
What other words of wisdom would you have for us that we didn't get a chance to talk about that you wanted to share?
Let me note down because that was one of your questions too. Okay. So,
Wrap us up.
words of wisdom. Well, we talked about do what you love and the success will follow. We talked about that. Stick to your values and attract others with the same culture.
Yeah, I like that.
We talked about that. There's one good saying, like, it's not my business what other people think about me. I think that helps give you the freedom to not get stuck in the muck, to you've got your values, you've got your vision and your goals, and stick to them
Yeah,
and not
don't get
worry
distracted.
about the rest. Yeah, don't get so stressed. Like, and if you do mess up, you apologize and you find a solution. So be like solution based and take ownership. The faster that you say, like, my bad, I apologize, the faster everybody can move on. Because usually the other person just wants you to say, like, I did that, my bad. Don't take yourself too seriously, And like I said, the saying about, for us, like we always say, real estate is not life or death. Because yeah, I think in all these, words of wisdoms and sayings are just, and we've talked a lot about faith and fear, it's just a way to live, because you can get so jammed up with whatever it is, whether it's the news or whether it's, what other people are saying on social media or, what other people are doing that you think, you're judging their outsides by your insides, and all that mess, that noise that we deal with in on a daily basis. And I think if we can just be very have a really good foundation and be set in our values and what we're doing and our vision, and just try the little things. Like, you're not gonna save the world, it doesn't have to be you're gonna save the world, but by the little tiny things that you do on a daily basis and connecting with other people and being helpful, and then we can all change the world together, so that's what it's about, is just kind of that daily commitment to here's what in my gut and I know is right and my values, and that's the path that I'm going to walk on.
So if someone wants to work with the Abby Shepherd Real Estate Group, who would be a good fit?
Oh, well, as far as to work on the team or like clients.
Like if some like a client, like someone wanted to buy or sell their house.
Yeah. Well, we do all of that. We work with buyers and sellers on the residential side. We have some commercial even as well. We have investors. So yeah, we have a website, abbyagent.com. You can go there and find information about us and connect with us through there. You know, even if some people, you know, some people on a yearly basis just kind of want to know what the value of their house is, you know, so we do house values and analysis, and any resources. And people call me for a plumber or a painter because of the business we're in. You know, I'm prepping listings all day long. I have a whole position that they do listing management. And so we have to keep a good list of vendors and trades, and they're very responsive to us. So if I can help someone out in like getting something done, you know, quickly and affordably, then I could be a good resource really for anything home related to anybody.
Okay. Yeah. And then how can they connect you with you? Like, you send out emails? Are you on social media? Like, if they want to get connected in that way, what are their options?
Yeah. So we are on social media. So we're the Abby Shepherd Real Estate Group. I actually don't know what our like little handle is.
Well, I'll put the links in the notes. So
if okay, cool. Want it, they, Thank
if they
you.
Can't remember how to say type it in, I'll have the link.
Yeah, I think because I know we have, you know, Instagram, business and personal, and then Facebook business and personal. We're not on TikTok, but or Twitter. But yeah, and then you can email me abby@abbyagent.com anytime.
Okay.
If you need anything.
Yeah, that sounds great. Anything else you want to say before we end the recording?
No, just, I mean, thank you for this. This was very, it was great to connect with you. And, in this space, hopefully it's helpful for other people as well.
Cool. So. Well, thank you so much for sharing your life with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Share Life. For additional stories and systems to live better and work smarter, visit jasonscottmontoya.com. That's jasonscottmontoya.com. We look forward to having you listen in on the next episode of Share Life.
Are you a small business owner? Have you hit a glass ceiling where year over year, you cannot rise above a certain revenue level? Check out Jason Scott Montoya's book, The Jump, to discover how to level up your leadership and pivot your entrepreneurial passion to the highest level. The Jump from Chaos to Clarity for your striving small business is available on Amazon.